podcast. In conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Dan Farrant.
Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. Dan is busy today, slash I can't seem to find and get hold of him. So instead of using the time talking to Dan, I've recorded an incredible jingle and he can't stop me from playing it.
Oh yes, it's time for a chat with the guest. Let's see what they've been up to on the podcast today. It is informative, educational. Who knows what we'll learn about our guest today? We will ask lots of questions and who knows what we'll find out. It's time for the Jazz Podcast today.
So with that absolute masterpiece out of the way, let's have a listen to Jitterbug, one of the tunes, Jitterbug Waltz, one of the tunes off the new duo album featuring Will Glazer and Liam Noble. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very good, man. It's a nice day today.
It is a lovely day. Woo. It's very warm. Have you been outside?
I have been outside, yeah. I've just been out drinking a coffee, which was very civilised.
I'm going to put this on for a second because I want to see you because it feels weird.
Oh, yeah, all right. All right, let's do it. Hang on. Here we go. Ah! Oh, beautiful. What is that, Diet Coke?
An iced coffee, my friend.
Oh my god, that's wonderful. This is a non-alcoholic brew dog. Can't be drinking while creating podcasts. I'm sure it will end incredibly badly.
Ah, well, I'm glad you told me that now.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I don't know. Wreak too much havoc on the show. It also kind of looks like whiskey in the right... In the right light, like a massive...
Massive whiskey.
Slightly fizzy whiskey. Hmm.
Ian Soda, right?
Yeah. It's a great experience for the listener when you're drinking and eating during a show.
As long as it's delicious, it's fine, right?
Yep, I agree. So, Will, first up, welcome back to the Jazz Podcast. This is the second time we've had you on. So, Tell our lovely listeners who you are.
Okay. I am... oh, that's quite a tricky question there. I'm a man.
Yes. Yes. Called Will Glazer.
I am a drummer.
Excellent.
That's about all there is to me, really. I am 27 years old. I'm right-handed. I have a penchant for hats and beards and coffee.
Mate, that's all the things I am. You and I are. He's from a pod.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else to say, really.
You live in London?
I do live in London.
Whereabouts?
Stowe.
Walthamstow?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. I used to live in Tottenham.
Nice, man.
Not too far away. Yeah, it is. It's changed a lot. I lived there in 2011. And I think people call it gentrification, which in my eyes is just a lot more Costa coffees each year.
Yeah, that's true. I went into a place in Walthamstow the other day and I tried to pay for a coffee with cash and they turned me away.
Wow.
Mm.
That's scandalous.
I didn't have my card with me.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
Yeah, I was really upset. And that's it's progress, isn't it?
No, I had the opposite. I went in a cash-only coffee shop cash-only. And I was like getting all millennial and like, what kind of an age is this? If you can only take cash, you're never going to make any money. Hard times.
It's just hard. Too many options.
It is hard, yeah.
It's not really hard, is it? Davinous and all.
So you have a new album out, and it's the second. I love this feeling, because this is always how I imagined if I made a second album, that it should be like a sequel, you know? So can you explain to our listeners what's going on here with this? Well, what was the first part?
The first part, which you kindly interviewed me and Matthew.
Yes, so
Matthew heard.
The listeners should press the pause button on it. If you haven't heard this half, they can go back and listen.
Yes. Well, it doesn't really matter which half you hear first, although one's part one, the other one's part two.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So that was me and Matt Heard have been collaborating, I think is the term, for quite a long time since we left. Well, we've been playing together since we were at music college, and then after music college we were playing, and then we did this record of standards and improvisations as a saxophone and drum duo, which was really, really fun. I loved that. And then whilst I was sort of thinking about doing that, it just suddenly occurred to me that I wanted to do more than one album. I didn't just want one. And this idea of doing loads of different duos sort of popped up. Because I've always enjoyed playing duos. I think it's really interesting. It makes me play differently. And it's sort of, you get right down to the sort of, well, it's the minimum number of people you can have without obviously being solo.
Yeah.
So it's like you get to really focus on the interaction, and like personalities of the musicians are really obvious.
Yeah.
I think. So it's quite fun. So part two, Climbing in Circles part two, is a duo with the fabulous pianist Liam Noble.
Yes.
You've also had on this.
Liam has been on the show, that is true. So you could also pause this show and that show and listen to Liam's episode. I've been a long-standing super fan of Liam Noble.
As am I.
Yeah.
super fan.
Yeah, that when I moved to London, one of the first albums I heard was Starry Starry Night with Paul Clarvis.
Thought you might bring that one up.
Yeah.
Because that was a big worry for me. No, it wasn't a big worry, but I also love that record. I think that's one of my favourite British jazz records, actually. They're playing. I love both of their playing individually. Paul Clarvis is an incredible drummer, and he plays brushes on that whole record. And the sound is amazing, and I love that. I think that was one of the things that made me really love duets, actually.
Right.
I think that might have been the first record I heard of Liam's as well.
Yeah. I'd heard his Brubeck thing before.
Right.
But it hadn't grabbed me in a violent kind of way, the way that album, you know, I was immediately like, oh man, this is really for me, you know. you know.
Yeah, he's got an amazing way of playing, very individual voice. It's just, he's fabulous.
Mm.
So I wanted to do it with him, because I met him. Not only did I always, like, Nick Smart introduced me to the Starry Starry Night when I was at Junior Academy, and I was, like, sort of blown away. And then he also brought tunes for us to play off Romance Among the Fishes,
mm-hmm.
which is with Phil Robson and Liam and Drew Gress and Tom Rainey. And it was just like, oh, God, who is this amazing person who writes all this music? And then can't remember ever he came in and did a session with us at Junior Academy, or I met him on a summer school and he was my tutor. And I just sort of like, not only did I love his music, but the way he thinks about music and like composition and stuff, he's just like incredibly inspiring.
Yeah.
He's a very, very important musician. So I asked him to play.
Great.
Good. Well, I hope it was really good. It was really fun for me to do.
Was it a one-day recording?
It was. We went in, we played through the tunes a few times, picked our favourites, did some improvisations. Yeah.
That sounds wonderful. Where did you record it?
We recorded it at Fish Factory.
Oh, cool. Oh, cool. In, like, Dollis Hill.
Yes. Yeah. This is an amazing sounding room.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely piano. Yeah, we wanted to get that sort of, like, you know, just two people playing thing.
Yeah.
Which we sort of spoke about when we did the duo with Matt. It's just like, you know, there's no overdubs, or it's very just, it's piano and drums or saxophone and drums.
Yeah.
Just going in, playing things. If things go wrong, they went wrong. If things didn't go wrong, that was good, and they made it on the album.
I've only ever heard one album where I'm okay with the overdubs.
Oh.
You know, I just feel like it's really disturbing. It really distracts me from trying to listen to the music when you're like, I don't know, I feel cheated. Like, if you can't play it live, then it shouldn't be allowed, you know? I don't right. know. I'm just...
I mean, I think that's kind of... I like that. Although the... maybe I shouldn't say this now you said that, but the next thing that me and Matt are going to do, I think, is going to be an album of overdubs.
Sick. Have you heard the Julian and Steve Arguiles duo?
Yeah, that is incredible.
Because that's another one where it's like, oh, this is allowed. I don't know. Julian does it in such a way. The whole it's album.
If you really have... thing of it, don't they?
Yeah.
It's like it needs the overdubs in order to be... I don't know. But yes. that's a whole other sort of can of worms.
No, you're right. I've said that like a really grumpy old man, but now there's loads of exceptions that instantly spring to mind. I guess what it is it's hard to do it in a way that doesn't detract from the essential musicality. You know, there's nothing worse than like a 21-year-old alto player who's just discovered a loop pedal for the first time. And I had a few of those on big band gigs where like this guy would get up to take a solo, you know, and like firing up the pedals and everything, and you're like, no man, this is not appropriate.
Oh,
I'm wary,
but I can't really comment on the pedals thing. I've never really done it, although I'm thinking about forays into that world.
Yeah, I think
just wanting at the moment.
Did you ever see a guy Joe Wright play?
Oh yeah,
he's like, Joe uses a computer game controller to control the electronic. That I love that. That really, like, watching Joe do that, I'd always be like, yes, I could. I'd never have the technical mind to program anything like that, you know, but to watch other people do it, it's a real treat.
Yeah, Joe is very special. Lots of special people, isn't there?
There are. There's a long list of people for me, and Joe's very near the top of it, where when I came to London and heard him play, it directly and violently changed how I played as a result. Over 2 years of listening to Joe, you know, the impression it made on my own playing is absolutely huge.
Yeah.
It's like he plays bebop, but with loads of unexpected notes that I didn't see coming, you know?
And then just some incredibly scary sounds come out.
Mm. Yeah.
Fascinating musician.
So are you going to do more than the two albums that you've got?
think so,
yeah. In terms of duos.
Yes. I mean, I don't know which one, what is going to happen next. There will be more duos. But currently, now that the duo with Matt and the duo with Liam is out, we're starting to gig and hopefully booking up a tour for sort of spring next year, touring both duos and playing as a trio. So I think the next thing will be a trio with both Matt and Liam.
Sweet.
To round the whole thing off. Because, yeah, I mean, like I sort of mentioned sort of it being about the personalities, and I quite like it as a little sort of like, it's almost like a little dissection of a band.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this is what me and Matt sound like together. And well, the other thing is that the tunes that we played on the part two with Liam are the same tunes that we played on part one with Matt. Yeah. So it was just like, we're not even going to pick different tunes. The whole point of it was just sort of be like, we're going to play these tunes. This is how it sounds when we play it together. And then we're going to play the same tunes, and it's going to be me and someone else. And it was Liam. And it's like, this is what they sound like together. And I think the next thing will be, we'll do a trio thing. This is what we all sound like together. And right. It's just how it all sort of changes. I just find that fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, you can think about it and you can try to do different things, but it's sort of like, it's just quite nice to see how it organically changes. You know, when we first, when I first took the tunes and played with Liam, it was, we didn't talk about it at all. We're just like, do you know this tune? Yes. Cool. We played it and it was like immediately without having to say anything, it was different. So we just sort of like used those things and went with that.
What made you decide to do the same tunes, both albums?
It was that thing of being like, okay, if it is about the personalities involved. It's almost like a scientific experiment where you try and keep, like, you have some variables that remain constant and then try and keep as much of it the same as possible so you can see the reaction of, like, one element changing. And that was the person. So... there is a tune different on both because I thought, you know, I'll let them choose a tune to keep them happy.
Oh, cool. Which tune did Liam choose?
I Want to Be Happy, which I think is, if anyone knows Liam, is quite a, well, or me actually, to be honest, is quite an ironic tune choice. and it was just that. I think it was just that I was sort of fascinated to see, from a personal perspective, how I would play differently between two recordings on the same tune. Thankfully, I do manage it not exactly the same.
Yeah.
I do that thing over and over again. That was pretty much the reason, really.
And which tune did Matt pick for his own one? Do you remember?
I think it was Broadway Blues. I don't know if he actually picked that. I might have said that he picked it, but actually I chose it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the illusion of it being, you know, all nice, but actually I'm really strict.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd played that before together as a duo.
Cool.
So it seemed like, I think we did, when, I can't really remember because it was such a long time ago now we recorded that, but I think we just, like, other than the tunes that we were definitely going to play, we might have just played some other tunes. And then we're like, oh, okay, we'll pick that one. That one's nice.
Yeah. It's really, I love with the duo. I feel like the choice of who you play with is like magnified when it's only one person.
Yes, you know?
It's really quite a bold and intense endeavor.
You just pick people that are better than you.
Well, that's the dream, absolutely.
Which is, you know, for me, fairly easy to do.
Yeah, same here.
Just you might as well just throw a ball into a pool of jazz musicians.
Yeah.
You'll do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's your right when you're organising it or running the band, you know, is that you should be the first gig I did in London with my own band. I asked, like, Tom Corley, Josh Blackmore, you know, Alex Monk. I just thought of, like, who are the guys I would most want to play with? And, of course, they were all just really up for doing it, know? And then, then it was really cool. But like, that's my life advice for anyone who's starting their own band now. It's like, for God's sake, go and like, I guess for like me playing with Tom Corley is a similar thing for you playing with Liam, you know, when you're like, you find someone who you're like, man, their playing is sick. And then you realize that they're just actually well up for having to play.
Amazing people as well as amazing musicians. So a good combo. Often the way as well.
I wrote a tune for Tom that was just one minim D.
I think I've seen the score of that.
So it's a great, one of my best pieces of writing, actually. And I was like, Tom, can you just like, it sounds like such a cop-out now, but I was young and foolish, you know. So I wrote this D and I printed it out and I was like, Tom, can you just improvise around, you know, do whatever you think with this as your stimulus. And it was by far the best 10 minutes of the gig to just be like, oh, man.
Yeah, I think that's, I really like that bit about, well, that's, I mean, the focus of the records is out, like, improvising.
Yeah.
Because, like, both Matt and Liam, I think, have got such amazing, unique voices. You just want to hear them play.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, that's kind of what you want. You don't want to go in telling them loads of stuff to do.
No. I don't know, this isn't about me, and I won't stay long on this, but like,
no.
For my own album, that like experience did lead me to think that a lot of the time for me, notation is taking away, not adding to what I'm trying to do here. So my album, there's no notation at all. It was just like a script and a few like ideas of what was going on at the time. But I like that, like you say, every time you play it, and if you play it with a different person, the piece, then it's very different because I don't know. I feel like anything I write is only going to make it worse, you know?
Well, it's a trade-off, isn't it? Because, like, you have ideas. I mean, we could, I mean, this is a rabbit hole, isn't it? We could go down the rabbit. Like, writing things down is not bad at all. It's a really, it's a useful way of quickly giving out people's information. And, you know, people write amazing, amazing things. Like, you had Mike Chillingworth on recently.
It's
like, you ain't going to get that together without some written music. His music is insane. And it's like the compositional element is just about, it's just as amazing as that overall effect, and the bleeding of that and the improvising is so amazing. But, you know, the trade-off of that is like, to make it really happen, you have to rehearse it loads.
Yeah.
You have to get, like, you have to be inside that music. And like, obviously he picked some absolute badass musicians who are going to get to the point really quickly. But that is, you know, you have to get, when you've got music, you have to get to the point of it not being needed anymore.
Yeah.
So it's quick in some areas, but I always find, for me, with written music, it takes me longer to get to the point where I feel like, oh, I'm playing this music now. I've been thinking about that a lot fairly recently, because I've had a few gigs where it's been like, you turn up and you haven't rehearsed and you've not played with everyone in the band, and it's like a whole set of, not necessarily originals, but it's all written down and like funny forms, and you can't take your eye off the page. And it's just like, I mean, it's great, it's a skill that you need, or some people need, maybe you don't need it, but like, for me, I just like, I'm knackered at the end of that, and I don't really feel like I've been listening to everyone else, because I'm so worried about getting everything right. I just wanted to not do that.
Yeah.
Just, you know, sit down and play.
Yeah, Stan Saltzman told me that for him, notation means it's like, it's work. If he's reading, it's not that fun. It's not about the music. This is like, I'm working here. It needs to be paid, and the music needs to be a certain size. but then if it's just improvised, then it's a whole different like category of what activity it is to him, you know. And I think as he's like reaching an age where he only wants to play for fun, he just doesn't really want to read that many notes anymore, which is excellent. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I sort I'm sort of with you on that. Or at least, like, if I'm going to read, it's for, like, for the time being, and I'm not going to continue to read this.
Yeah.
For, you know, in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I like, yeah, well, I guess you get way more inside of the music if you can get... I used to play in Pete Lee's band. I was fired very quickly for Josh Arcaleo. But before I was fired, I had the whole damn set from memory, you know, and it was great to be able to play it all and not look at a music stand, because you could... I'd not really done that with a band before. I could look around and listen to what everyone was doing, and, you know, it was really fun having gone through the effort to learn it.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it really is. I do find, actually, like, some... Like, that... Learning music, I find, one, if I've learned the music by ear, it's much easier to memorize. And if I've trying to learn music from it being written down, it's almost like my brain just won't do it. It's like, no, we're reading this now.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
It does use a different part of your brain, I'm sure, because it doesn't work if you just take the page, if you take the dots away. What's this tune? Is that Confirmation? It's a Parker tune. Maybe it is.
Yeah, I think so. God, don't put me on the spot.
Sorry. It's not with my singing. It's not going to help either. But when I learned that, Pete Churchill was like, it's a Parker tune, but I'm going to sing this to you and you're going to learn it by ear. You know? And I think it took me about 2 hours to get it. It was bad because everyone else in the class got it really quickly. You know?
That's not... It's not bad. It's just different. I think that... That is why a lot of people don't do that. Oh, God, we've completely got...
It worked, though. I've never forgotten it.
I think learning by ear is really, really the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
I spend so much time as a teacher just being like, it doesn't matter if it takes you 2 hours to get one bar of, like, whatever it is. It's, like, the actual process of, like... I mean, it can be agony. Like, you've just got to... You've got to do it. And then when you do that, even if it... The feeling of satisfaction when you get to the end and you've done it is amazing. But also, like, something clicks and it's yours, and it's important, that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to the album. Have you self... have you self-released them?
I have, yeah. Both are self-released. Both are on Bandcamp. Awesome. And all the other ones. Spotify and...
So it's available. Is it, you can buy it as a digital download, or we can stream it.
Yes, obviously, buying it is
ideal.
That's the ideal. Yeah, but yeah, you can. I just wanted to. I'm not too fussed about making loads of money out of it. I just wanted to. Yeah, no, just wanted to do something.
Yeah,
and the process has been massively interesting. I've thought about music and people and, like, improvising and playing so much because of just doing it. And the feeling of satisfaction of actually having something that goes, look, though, you know, we did it.
Yeah.
I like them. I think they sound nice.
Yeah.
I'm fairly pleased with them.
Other people. Man, they're beauties. It's wonderful. It's wonderful what you've done. It's a joy to listen to. And I love the way you've presented it as two parts with the same tunes, you know. It's very gripping.
Well, I try to be.
Did you feel like, was it ever a challenge, having listened to the Paul Clarvis and Liam duo? How do you, like, approach playing with Liam without going...
Full Clarvis.
Yeah, I love that. Full Clarvis. I mean, obviously, on the one hand, it's easy because you're not him.
Yeah.
You know?
Although, yes, but I did spend quite a long time trying to be him. Mm-hmm.
I don't blame you.
But, yeah, but thankfully, that was quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've been sort of like, having heard that record, and then when I went to Guildhall, it was suddenly like, I'm in Guildhall. The music college, and then, like, because some of the teachers played with Paul, and, like, he did the LJO that Scott Stroman ran, and he sort of got students to dep for Paul, and I got to meet Paul, and then ended up depping in like bands for him. I spent a long time sort of being like, oh, I'm playing in a band Great. Where Paul plays in, and I'm trying to be Paul. Yeah. And
Diet Clavis.
Yeah. Yeah, without the tartan trousers. I spent a long time doing that, but
that Diet Clavis remark was just supposed to be stupid. That wasn't like...
No, but it definitely was. It was like, you can't be full fat Clavis unless you're Clavis.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I love the way he plays the drums. And it has been a big influence on me. However, there are like... I think the way I sort of approached it was like, I'd gone through that. I didn't listen to that album on purpose. Mm-hmm. Like... I kind of wanted to.
Yeah, and Liam plays very differently with you as well.
Mm. I haven't sort of done the comparison because I'm too scared.
Interesting. Well, it holds up beautifully. Not that I've held them side by side. I've just scarred myself with Liam and Paul, you know.
Yeah.
But then when I listened to your album, I didn't at any point feel really that it was similar at all, you know, in a good way. It's just a... but I wasn't surprised by that. You know, like you said, that his duo with Paul was a long time ago, and your playing affects how he plays really differently. So it's just is completely different.
Yeah, I think so. And also, like, I guess one of the things that I really like about playing duos, and I guess it's like when I play with Matt, when I play with Liam, you'll be able to hear how it sounds like the same person, but I'm playing differently because they're bringing different things out in me.
Yeah.
Because of, like, you know, Matt and Liam will know lots of the same music, but then they'll also know lots of other music, and their inspiration and where they draw things from is going to be slightly different, even though it's on the same material. And I guess, like, as much as I love Paul, I've sort of, like, Paul's his own entity with all his own loves and likes, and that... the sort of shared music that him and Liam will be into is different from the shared music that me and Liam are into.
Yeah.
Lots of, like, you know, Paul Blade, Paul Motion sort of stuff, and Andrew Hill and things that we've talked about. And yeah, I don't know. I don't actually know for certain if that's the thing, but that's the sort of hunch that I sort of have, is like, one of the things I love about how Liam and Paul play on Starry, Starry Night is, like, they seem to have, like, a real shared interest and love of, like, early jazz. Mm-hmm. And that comes out in a really contemporary way, I think, in both of their playing. Yeah. And although I do love all of that sort of music, I can't help but, I came into the world at a later period of time. I had, like, different influences, and I came to all of that music much later. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm so into, like, really early styles of jazz now, but I didn't grow up playing it, like, in the same way that I think Paul did or something like that. Yeah. So yeah, I did think about that. I didn't want to compare it too much there. No. Like, that is pretty much a perfect album.
Yeah.
My opinion, and just to be clear, I'm not talking about my album.
Yeah. You could, like, write your own, like, review for the, like, poster.
In my opinion, this is the album.
Yep, that's beautiful. What are the gigs then? Have you got anything coming up soon that our listeners can come check out if they want to?
Yeah. Well, depends when this goes out, I guess.
This will be out on Friday.
Ah, so it will be too late for the gig at Kansas Smitty's this Wednesday.
Oh, crumbs.
Other than that, I don't think we have anything currently in the diary until April next year, when we're going to go around the UK. I'm still working on booking up that tour.
Yeah.
There is, I think me and Matt are doing a duo set in the London Jazz Festival at the Spice of Life. Oh, I think great. That's on the Thursday in the London Jazz Festival. Mm-hmm. And then a week on Wednesday, let me check what date that is, me and Liam are doing a duo set, The Vortex, which is part of Rachel Cohen's new night.
Oh, nice. She's
all duos. That's the 4th of September.
Oh, cool.
So that'll be in time. And then the other duo that night is Brandon Allen and Ross Stanley.
Nice.
It's going to be
yeah.
It's going to be glorious.
Yeah, that's sick.
Yeah. Other than that, watch this space.
Okay, great. Well, Will Glazer, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast.
Been an absolute bloody pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
That was the tune Will mentioned in the interview, I Want to Be Happy, one that Liam had chosen as his own choice for that. So, without Dan, I've created a little gift for him for the way out. Here we go.
Oh yes, it's time for a chat with the guest. Let's see what they've been up to on the podcast today. It is informative, educational. Who knows what we'll learn about our guest today? We will ask lots of questions and who knows what we'll find out. It's time for the Jazz Podcast today.